conference record has joined the conference.
Okay. You want to do the introduction, Heather, or shall I?
Okay, sure. So thanks for joining. This is the first public EC meeting of 2013. We'll have another one coming up later in the year. Today our agenda is a JCP.next update, and we have the JCP Chair Patrick Curran on the line to give us an update on what the Executive Committee has been working on and what things they'll be focusing on for the rest of the year to deliver JCP.next to the community. We'll also leave some time at the end for questions where we can turn off the conference record, but just a reminder that we're recording the call at this point. So I'll turn it over to Patrick.
Thank you, Heather. Okay, thanks for joining. We're going to talk about JCP.next and how we're doing. So, slide two, the agenda. I'll give you just a quick bit of background on what we mean by JCP.next and what we've done so far. And then I will give you a specific update on a couple of areas we've been working in, the first one being around intellectual property policy, licensing, and open source, and the second one being the role of individual members. So, on to slide three, and a reminder, what we're talking about here is the process of constitutional change, how we change the way that the JCP itself is organized and it's structured. We have our own version of a constitution, slide four. We, in fact, have two documents that determine, describe, and define our legal framework, the framework within which we operate, and our governance, the way that we are organized and the way that we do our business. First of these is called the Java Specification Participation Agreement, JSPA. This is the legal agreement that you sign when you join the organization, and its purpose is to address intellectual property grants and the terms under which the output of the process, the spec, the RI, and the TCK are licensed. This is a legal document, so it's pretty scary, but if you want to take a look at it, there's a link here to it. The second document is a little simpler, easier to understand, but it's still legalistic. Called the process document, and that defines our governance, the way that we're organized and structured, how we organize our elections, and so on. It defines the processes that we use to submit and define and move JSRs through the process, and it defines the obligations to produce the RI and the TCK, as well as the spec. And this document, too, is available online, and the URL is here. These are the two documents that define and determine how the organization is structured, organized, and functions. Slide five. How do we change the process? Well, since we have a well-defined process for creating and modifying specifications, and since these two documents that I've just talked about, you could think of them as specifications for the way the organization itself is structured and functions, then we decided there's no need to define a new process for changing them. What we will do is use the existing JSR process. So we file a JSR to modify the process. That JSR is like any other JSR, except we don't produce a spec, an RI or a TCK. We have an expert group which consists of the executive committee. Everyone on the executive committee is the expert group for these process change JSRs. And I act as the spec lead. And otherwise, we process these JSRs to change our process in the same way as we process any other JSR. The output, rather than being a technical specification, RI and TCK, is a new version of the process document and or the JSPA. And just incidentally, sometimes when I talk about this, people say, why is there no TCK for process change JSRs? And that's a good question. We should have something in place to verify that what we intended by revising these documents actually took place. So we're going to look into that. Slide six. So what do we mean by JCP.next? Back in 2010, shortly after Oracle took over from Sun as the steward of Java, we had a face-to-face meeting in Bonn, Germany. And at that meeting, we agreed that we needed to move forward and make a series of changes to our processes to make sure that our legal and governing documents, the JSPA and the process document, and our practices were synchronized to clarify things, to simplify things, and so on. As we got into this work, we realized that there was a lot of work to do, and rather than do it all in one big chunk, wanted to deliver some stuff early, so we decided that we would do this in phases. And we ended up, in fact, filing three separate process change JSRs, which I'll talk about in a moment. Collectively, that is what we mean when we talk about JCP.next. Okay, slide 7. So the first of these, JCP.next.1, was JSR 348, and that was all around transparency and participation. In the old days, people used to say, JCP is the secretive organization. They have these things called expert groups, but it's a bunch of old geezers sitting in a smoke-filled room making decisions, and we don't know what's going on. And then after they've done that for a year or two, a spec pops out the other end, and nobody knows where it came from, why it takes the form that it does, because all the deliberations happen in secret. That's not entirely true, but there was some truth to it. So we decided we would fix that. So we focused on low-hanging fruit. We wanted to get something done within 6 months because there hadn't been any of these process change JSRs for quite a while. So we started early in 2011. We finished in October of that year, and the result was a new version of the process document, which we called JCP, the process version 2.8. Anything that was complicated, we had a long shopping list. We just postponed all the complicated stuff. We said we want to finish this quickly. If it's difficult, if it's controversial, if it requires change in the JSPA, which means lawyers have to get involved, we just put it off. So we focused on simple stuff, but they were important changes. We wanted to make some simple changes that would make the processes more transparent and make it easier for people to participate. I'm assuming, since we've talked about this many times in public, that you're familiar with what we did there, and hopefully you have enjoyed the benefits. One of the things that came out of this was, for example, the whole Adopt a JSR movement, which is an initiative promoted by a couple of Java user groups, London Java Community, and so Java in Brazil, to encourage people to participate in the work of the JCP. So that was JSR 358. The second JSR was JSR 355. This was very simple. Its purpose was simply to merge the two executive committees. At the time, we had one for Java SE and EE and a second committee for Java NE. Together, you can think of them as the board of directors of the JCP. We decided that having separate executive committees was not a good idea. We wanted to emphasize that Java is a single platform. We expect Java NE and Java SE to converge over time, so we thought it would be best to merge the two executive committees. In the process, we decided to reduce the number of executive committee members from what was then 32 to 25. You may know that we have two kinds of members, those who are nominated by Oracle and voted on by the community, and those that are openly elected where they can nominate themselves. So we decided to keep the same ratio of what we call ratified to elected seats. So out of the 25 members, one will be Oracle, there will be 16 ratified members and 8 elected members. This JSR made no other changes to our processes. We finished the JSR in October 2012. We started the implementation. We actually merged the two ECs during the October 2012 annual elections. And we will complete the process by formally eliminating the extra seats in October 2013, in this year's elections. And just as a reminder, as part of this process, everybody who is on the EC today will have to run for election again this year. Usually it's only a percentage of the members because we have a kind of rolling system. In the past, one-third of the members would stand for re-election every year. This year, everybody's going to stand for re-election, so it'll be a real competitive election, and we hope you'll participate. Going forward, then, with the reduced size of the EC, we'll be going to a two-year election cycle. So that's JSR 355. That was an easy one. the first two were actually pretty easy. We finished the first one in 6 months and the second one in 3 or 4 months. But the third one is the scary one, JSR 358. This is not easy. Slide 13. It's not easy because we are going to be modifying the GSPA, which is a legal document. It hasn't been significantly modified since 2002, minor changes in 2005. But since this document was drawn up, the GCP itself and the environment we operate in have changed significantly. The most important thing, for example, I would say is that, you know, widespread adoption of open source licensing and development practices. But more specifically, the document was drawn up at a time when the assumption basically was that Sun was the center of the Java universe. Sun would do almost all of the spec development work with some participation from others, but Sun would do most of the work. Sun would do the implementation, and then Sun would license the results to everybody else who would take Sun's source code, tweak it for their own environments, and create their own versions. That's just not the way things are done these days. It's a much more collaborative effort, and we need to change the GSPA to reflect that. So we've needed to make these changes for a long time, but it is a complicated document, and changing it is kind of like changing legacy source code. You've got to be really careful. There's stuff in there that you don't know whether it's vestigial, whether it has any purpose, or whether it's really important, and if you change it, you're going to break something. Legal documents are like that. So we've got to be very careful when we make changes to this document. And, of course, and this is why the whole thing is a scary and a complicated process, you've got to bring all the lawyers into it. We're already talking to Oracle's lawyers, and before very long, the lawyers from the other major participants on the executive committee will also get involved. And those of you who have spent time with lawyers will know only too well that it can be a very complicated process. So, why is this important? Well, the JSPA, its primary purpose is to define the way in which intellectual property is granted. So when people make contributions or participate in the process, they are making a contribution of intellectual property, ideas. And also to define the terms under which the results of the process, that is the spec, the RI, and the TCK, are licensed out to others so that they can either create their own implementations of specifications or incorporate them into products or build products on top of them. In this process, we've got to make sure that the technologies that we incorporate into Java are safe from an IP perspective. In other words, we need to know that if somebody is contributing an idea, that they own that idea. They have the right to contribute it, and that we can kind of track the IP and make sure that the appropriate grants of IP are made so that when we then license it out at the other end, people can consume it. People can incorporate it into products, use it, build products on top of it, create their own implementations, and do that with confidence, knowing that somebody's not going to pop up the other side of the world, some patent troll, and say, you owe me a bunch of money because I claim ownership of some idea that has been incorporated into this technology. And any of you who follow the technology world and the notion of patents and so on will know that this can be a real risk. There are people out there who make a living out of shaking down companies and even end users and claiming that they have infringed patents. So that's what we're trying to guard against. Our goals in this process, that's the primary goal, make sure everything is safe. But then the secondary goals are to simplify the IP flow as much as we can, to simplify the licensing models that we use. We want to embrace open source licensing and development processes. And while we do this, we want to maintain the compatibility guarantees that Java has always given you. The assurance, which you don't get with many other standards bodies, that all implementations are the same, they are all complete, they are all compatible with each other, and they are all hopefully interchangeable. Of course, you know, in reality, you can run into problems, but the old promise of write once, run anywhere is what we're trying to maintain here with our compatibility guarantees. And this GSR, we hope, will define the way that we operate for the next several years, and it will determine the extent to which you and the developer community can participate. So, we have a long shopping list of things that we are going to, that we are discussing. Here's a short list of them. I won't read them because you could read for yourselves. I'm on slide 16, but licensing open source, compatibility, IP flow, so on and so on. I've provided a couple of links at the bottom here to a presentation that lists all of these and goes into more detail. But the definitive list of what we're working on is in our issue tracker, and I've provided a link to that also. The items that are listed in red are the ones that we've been focusing on primarily during the first several months of working on this particular GSR. So let's go on now and talk about more details of this. Slide 17. So the progress we've made so far is basically we focused in two areas. IP policy licensing and open source is one, and the role of individual members is the second. We created a little working group for each of these topics, and these groups meet regularly. They contain a subset of the executive committee members, but we report back to the executive committee, which, if you remember, is the expert group for this GSR. We report back at each executive committee meeting. This meeting we're holding right now is a public meeting. In the hour before this, we had our regular monthly executive committee meeting, and we spent our time talking about exactly these two topics, focusing on reports from the two working groups as to how they're getting on with these topics. And that's what I'm going to be covering in the remainder of this presentation. But if you want to take a look at the latest reports from these two working groups, you can go to the minutes of the May face-to-face meeting, executive committee meeting. We met in Zurich for 2 days in May, and we spent at least half of our time there talking about JCP.next, GSR 358 business. So you can see the latest reports in the public minutes from that meeting. We do publish our executive committee meeting minutes typically a couple of weeks after the meeting finishes. So the minutes from the meeting that took place an hour ago, you will see in a week or two. Okay, so let's start with IP policy, licensing, and open source. So at the May meeting in Zurich, Don Deutsch, who is the primary representative for Oracle on the executive committee, presented a proposal on IP policy, licensing, and open source from Oracle. This built on a bunch of changes that were suggested by the IP working group, but it kind of changed the emphasis a little bit. It focused on openness, transparency, and participation. And the proposal was trying to do two things. It wanted to, those of you familiar with the terminology of open source and Stallman's work on it will understand the distinction between free as in speech and free as in beer. Richard Stallman always said, open source is not about free beer. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to get things that you don't have to pay for, but it does mean that you will have free access to them. So the proposal that Don put together basically put the emphasis on free as in speech. Oracle has long said we wanted to give access to specifications and to the Java platform to everybody, but not everybody would necessarily get it for free. Some people would have to pay because Oracle spends an enormous amount of money, and others do too, in developing and maintaining specifications, Java technologies. So we put this proposal together. Oracle's lawyers and senior executives approved it. We presented it, or Don presented it, at the face-to-face meeting in Zurich. And the executive committee there agreed that the proposals had merit, that they were worth pursuing, and that we should build on them and use them as the basis for the ongoing work of the GSR 358 expert group. So, quick summary of the proposals. We want to modify the JSBA and related documents, the process document and anything else. We want to define standardized licenses, contribution agreements, and development practices. In the process of doing this, we want to remove any conflicts or ambiguities and make sure that all of these legal and procedural documents are consistent with each other and with the way that licensing is carried out today. We want to formally embrace open source licensing and development processes, recognize that we're in a different world and that if we want to continue to thrive, we're going to have to embrace the open source world. We want to take the work that we did in 348, the JCP.next.1 on openness and transparency, and bring it to a logical conclusion to make it even easier for everybody to participate. And as I said, in the process of doing this, we want to define the processes that we will follow for the next several years. Obviously, we're going to have to fine-tune this, it's a big deal to make change the JSBA. We don't want to have to start and do it again. This one. Okay, on to the details, slide 20. I'll cover each of these topics, but very quickly, modified JSBA, standard spec license, standard contributor agreement, open source development processes, standard RI licenses and TCK licenses, and making sure that developers have free access to the TCKs. So, I've already really covered this, but just for the record, we're going to modify the JSBA and any related documents to incorporate all of the changes that I'm about to discuss to make sure that everything is consistent. In the process, we'll clean up the JSBA to the extent that we can, try and simplify it. Slide 22, standard specification license. We almost have this today. Oracle has a template for a spec license. It contains strong compatibility requirements, basically says you don't get IP rights to what is contained in the spec unless your implementation is compatible. Almost all spec leads already use this template for their spec license. So we want to mandate that everybody will. So in the future, there'll only be one spec license. Every JSR will use the same one. It'll be derived from this template, and it will include strong compatibility requirements. Slide 23, open source development processes. We want to mandate that the reference implementations for all future non-umbrella JSRs, and I'll explain that in a moment, must be developed through open source development processes, through an open source project. This doesn't mean, by the way, that any random person on the planet gets to put random changes into the Java technology. Open source projects are typically run as meritocracies. You have to earn the right to become a committer, and that will still apply. Let's look at the term. An umbrella JSR is basically a JSR that defines a platform, such as Java SE, Java ME, or a profile, such as the recently introduced Java ME embedded profile. We've made an exception for these because under some circumstances, Oracle may not be willing to do the work as an open source project. However, Oracle, as you see in the footnote here, has committed to open source development processes for Java SE and Java EE. So in other words, there is a slight carve out here, and you'll see it in a couple of other places, for some of the Java ME technologies, where the core of the Java ME platform, that is the platform spec and profile specs, at the moment that basically means two JSRs, JSR 360 and 361, will continue to be developed in a closed-source manner by Oracle and will be licensed only commercially. But everything else is going to be done out in the open, open development process and open source licensing. We want to make sure that it's possible to host these development projects outside of Oracle, so not just at java.net, such as OpenJDK or Glassfish, but if people want to host an RI project at Eclipse or Apache, we need to make sure that that's possible. This may require some kind of contributor agreement. We're still discussing that, more of that on the next slide. We're not going to mandate exactly how people do their work, but we do want to specify what we think are the characteristics of a genuinely open and collaborative development process. For example, you should have a well-defined process for becoming a committer, and people should understand what you need to do to become a committer. You should be able to find out a list of who is the committers and so on. So we'll define these characteristics, and we will require that spec leads publish information to the executive committee and to the public to enable everybody to judge whether they're actually doing what we want them to do, whether they are running things in a genuinely collaborative manner. Because, for example, when we introduced GSR 348, we said, for example, you must have a public communication channel to report on the work that you do. Typically, that will be a mailing list. It's quite possible that a spec lead expert group could create a public mailing list, but then not actually post anything to it. Or they could allow the public to write to it and ignore what they write. They are required to have a public issue tracker, but they may not actually log any bugs. Or they may ignore bugs logged by the public. So we are not saying exactly how you should do these kind of things, but we want us to say what the result must be, and we want to track it to make sure people are doing the right thing. Okay, slide 24. Just to make sure I didn't lose anybody, could somebody just say hello?
Hello.
Okay, thank you. All right. I mentioned that a contributor agreement may be necessary. Oracle has suggested that contributors to RI development projects would need to sign a contributor agreement similar to or that will be derived from the contributor agreement that's currently used for OpenJDK. We have some disagreement within the executive committee about whether this is necessary. We haven't resolved that yet, so we're still discussing this, but we do all agree that it must be possible to incorporate JSRs that were not led by Oracle and that were run on external sites such as Eclipse or Apache. It must be possible to incorporate them into the platform. So we'll work that out. Slide 25. RI licenses. Today, the spec lead is free to choose any license they want for RIs. And it can be very confusing and sometimes makes it difficult to mix and match RIs. In the future, we want to say that all non-umbrella JSRs, there's that qualification again, Oracle will commit to this for Java SE and Java EE, they must be made available under one or more of a small set of what we're calling approved open source licenses. We've currently got three on our list, GPL v2 plus ClassPath Exception, which is how Java SE is currently licensed. Apache version 2 and Eclipse version 1. We may add one or maybe two more, but we want to keep this list short. We want to get rid of the complicated situation where you have a random number of licenses and any JSR, whenever it comes out, you have to examine the RI license, you have to see whether it's the same as the previous one, and get rid of all that by having a set of standard licenses. We'll also have a commercial RI license that we will define in a standard manner, and this will be used for any umbrella JSRs that are not released in an open source license, and today that will mean JSR 360 and 361 only. Everything else you're going to be able to get under an open source license. Okay, that's the RI. Slide 26. Similarly for TCKs, all future JSRs, the TCKs must be made available for certification and branding purposes, that is, for compatibility testing and claims of conformance, under either one of those approved open source licenses or a standard commercial TCK license. Most members of the executive committee have said that when they act as a spec lead, they will choose an open source license for their TCKs. Oracle has said that they will not. Oracle has concerns about open source TCKs. They think that that will weaken the compatibility regime. So their choice is going to be a commercial TCK license, similar to what we have today. But, slide 27, in order to address the need for developers to have access to the TCKs, there's an additional proposal, which is that the TCKs for all, again, non-umbrella JSRs, but with a commitment to do this also for SE and EE. So again, only the ME 360 and 361 will not be available in this way. TCKs will all be made available under what we're calling a community TCK license. We already have a license like this, and it's the one that's used for the TCK for Java SE. That's called the JCK, Java Compatibility Kit. I used to be the manager of that project a few years ago. So anybody who's a participant in an OpenJDK project can get access to the JCK, the TCK for Java SE, under this license. We'll use that as the basis of the, we'll generalize it and create a JCP community TCK license, and we'll use this license for all TCKs. This license will permit people who sign it, which is basically anybody who's willing to sign it, there's no charge, of course. You can use it to test the reference implementation, to test your own implementation. If it's derived from the reference implementation and will be licensed in an appropriate manner. But you can't use this TCK to actually brand a product. If you want to get an official kind of Java-compatible brand, you would have to take the regular TCK license, which in many cases will be an open-source license, but in the case of Oracle-led TCKs will be a commercial license. So, free access to TCKs for people who work on the development projects. So that's the list of what we're doing with what we're proposing to do with regard to open source and licensing. Now let me move on to individual members. Why are we focusing on individual members? Why do we have a working group here? Why do we think we need to make changes? Well, we certainly want to encourage individual members, people to join as individuals, join the organization, and to participate in the work that we do. The Adopt JSR project that I talked about earlier has clearly demonstrated how valuable it is to bring individual developers into the process and to harness their energy and enthusiasm. However, if you remember, I said earlier that the primary goal of the JSBA is to make sure that intellectual property that is contributed into the process is safe. The problem we have with individual members is we are not getting the same level of IP protection as we are with corporations. Individuals typically don't make such a strong commitment. Many individuals participate without signing the JSBA. They're unable to sign it. They find it too complicated from a legal perspective. It's intimidating. They don't have lawyers to interpret it for them. It requires a signature from their employer, which in many cases employers are not willing to provide. So that's one of the problems that we have. The result of this is that many individuals are participating without making formal IP commitments, and that's a legal risk. We also have a problem that some corporations don't sign up in their own right, but instead they encourage their employees to join as individuals. Under those cases, the employers are not making any IP commitments at all. They're simply releasing their employee and saying they can make commitments in their own right. So we have to clear this up. So what we're proposing to do is to introduce a new class of membership specifically designed for individuals. We call this affiliate membership. There will be a significantly simpler membership agreement than the JSBA. You won't have to read and understand that complicated 17-page document. There'll be a much simpler agreement, which will be a contributor agreement. You'll be making an IP commitment. You'll say, I want to participate in the work of the JCP. I assert that any ideas that I contribute will be my own and that I have the right to contribute them, and I will release them to the community under the same terms or similar terms as other people who sign the JSBA. This will be a much simpler agreement. This will enable affiliate members to contribute through programs like Adopt-JSR to get public recognition for these contributions, but to do so in a way that is safe from an IP perspective. We'll be providing a bunch of other membership benefits and privileges that we're still working out the details of. If you go and look at the reports from the individual members working group that I mentioned earlier, which you can find on the jcp.org meeting minutes page, you'll be able to see some of the details of this. And we want to make sure that individual members, affiliate members, are able to vote in the elections, but we do want to make sure that those who contribute the most, that means the full members who've signed the full legal agreement, who act as spec leads and members of expert groups and so on, are not swamped by individuals. We're hoping this will be a very successful program and that we'll end up with many hundreds, if not thousands, of affiliate members. But we don't want to be in a situation where the affiliate members can completely outvote the smaller number of full members. So we'll be using a kind of weighted voting mechanism. We're still working out the details, but everybody will get a chance to vote and the opportunity to participate in defining the way that the organization moves forward and in electing the members of the board of directors of the executive committee. So that's what we're proposing to do with individual members. Let me check my time, see how I'm doing here. Okay, just about on time. So what does all of this mean? Slide 30. Slide 31. JCP stands for Java Community Process. We want to make sure that the community really can participate. We started this process with JSR 348, which enabled you to participate in developing the Java specifications. Now we want to extend it. We want to embrace open source development processes and open source licensing. And with JSR 358, enable you to participate in the actual implementation of these specifications through the open source development processes for the RIs themselves. The RIs will be available under open source licenses so that people can freely access them, and we will have a community TCK license to give you access to the TCKs. So you can be a full participant in the process. We're going to make it even easier for you to join. We're going to get rid of the remaining, or as many as we can, of the barriers to participation. So if you care about the future of Java, and obviously you do, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this call, then there's no excuse. Slide 32. We want you to get involved. Slide 33. As we work through this process, JSR 358, we're doing this in public, of course, because JSR 348, the first of the JCP.next JSRs, says that all future JSR work must be done in public. So we have a public Java.net project. The URL is here. You can go there and take a look at it. There, in fact, why don't I switch briefly and show you this, if I can get to my web browser. I need to share this. Application. Okay. JSR 358. So on java.net. There we go. So this is the home page for JSR 358 on java.net. You have a link in this presentation. And this contains there's a link to the Observer's mailing list, which is a mailing list you can subscribe to. All of our traffic within the expert group is copied to that alias, that mailing list. We have a discussion forum. People don't really use that. They seem to prefer the mailing list. We have a document archive. We have an issue tracker, which I can show you here. I mentioned this earlier, but all of the issues that we are working with are listed here. You can read these. You can log your own issues. we have a document archive divided into a number of sections, the kind of material that went in to start this JSR, all of our meeting materials from the working groups and the expert groups. So here you'll see the minutes from recent meetings of the IP working group, for example. The individuals working group stuff is reported through the executive committee meeting minutes. A bunch of presentations are linked and a whole bunch of other stuff. So everything is done out in the open. And we encourage you to browse that stuff, take a look, to participate, let us know what you think, give us your ideas, and help to keep us on track, help us to do the right thing. We're doing this for you. We want to really open things up and enable everybody to participate. So go for it. You can help to make the future of Java by participating, and we really want you to do so. So that's all I have. I'll open things up now if people have questions or comments. Heather, I think you were going to stop the recording at this point, so if people are a little bit shy, they may be encouraged to speak up. Is that the way you want to do this?
Yes, I'll go ahead and do it now.
Okay, so hold on, please, while we stop the recording.